Welcome to The Lobbying Show, the show about the people of government relations, how they got into it, and what their jobs entail, what works and what doesn't. I am the host, Jim O'Brien. Today on the episode, we have Vlad Cartwright. He is the president of 720 Strategies. 720, name comes from 360 degrees online and 360 degrees offline. They are located in Washington, D.C., in our nation's capital. 720, they say, step into the circle. That's kind of their tagline. They develop grassroots PAC and PR campaigns. They do PAC management, compliance, PAC fundraising, grassroots, branding, strategic communications. They do it all. And they do campaigns in all 50 states. And when they're working in a state, they look to partner with a state lobbyist in the state they're working in. And so although this isn't a lobbyist per se, they do a lot of work with and around lobbying campaigns. So lobbyists, pay attention. Prior to being at 720, Vlad was at Burson Marsteller and prior to that, Direct Impact. He is a great guy. And we had a great interview, great chat in his office in downtown Washington, D.C. So I hope you enjoy the interview. And this will be the last interview of the summer, this Labor Day. Prior to kicking into the fall campaign season. So the summer is now come to an end. And the viewer comments, we have gotten a lot of viewer comments, and a common suggestion that we have heard is to drill down a little bit more in some of the topics that we cover as to what works and what doesn't. So we will begin to do a little bit more of that if we can. We're trying to keep the episodes to around 30 minutes and to get the kind of the background and the biography of the people and into what they're doing in their work. Sometimes it's hard to fit that into 30 minutes, but we have heard that a few times, so we will try to start drilling down a little bit more in some of the topics that we cover. Now, we are usually a few weeks ahead of ourselves, so you may not see that begin to happen for a few weeks now. So thank you for the viewer comments. Keep them coming, and I hope you enjoy the interview. All the best. So how long ago did you guys start 720, and who started 720?
Sure. So Pam Fielding started 720 back in 1998, and it was started actually as a company called eAdvocates.
Okay.
And she started the firm basically as a practitioner who was working in a national trade association. She dealt with grassroots and advocacy at the trade association, and through her daily work, she saw that this new thing called the internet was coming. And she was able to sort of harness the power of the internet for her organization. And after some pretty major successes at the federal and state level for her organization and their membership, she actually decided to go into the consulting business because she worked with some consultants and was always pushing them to do more, to do better, to do it a different way, to make it more effective. And so she really caught the bug for the consulting side of it.
And she thought, well, maybe I can do this a little better.
She did. She did.
And clearly she has.
Yeah.
And when did you join?
I joined 720 Strategies in 2010.
Okay.
So I've been here for half the ride.
Half the ride. Okay.
Yeah.
And before that, where were you?
Before that, I was at a company called Direct Impact, which was a wholly owned subsidiary of Burson Marsteller, a global public relations firm.
Yeah.
And I did grassroots consulting with them. I started my career in 1989, working on Capitol Hill as a sophomore in college. And then left Capitol Hill in 1992 and went to work for a trade organization and coalition, which was made up of about 50 healthcare companies. And that was sort of the perfect time because the Clinton administration was starting with their healthcare reform campaign. And we We're working in 48 states at that point on grassroots initiatives to support certain parts of it, oppose other parts of it, but overall support an incremental and market-based approach to healthcare reform.
The Hillary Care.
Prior to Obamacare. That's correct.
So that was 1988. You started working on the Hill. Where were you in college?
I was at American University here in Washington, which was about six blocks away from where I grew up. I sort of knew what I wanted to do, so I stayed here in town for college. And I worked for Butler Derrick, who was a member from the 3rd District of South Carolina, who was on the Rules Committee as well as Chief Deputy Whip of the majority at the time. So that was a great introduction into not only the policy of public affairs, but also the politics of it, how things got done, how you counted votes, how you whipped an issue on the Hill. So it was pretty interesting.
So you were doing more than just working in the mailroom.
Correct.
Now, were you still taking classes at American, or did you take a semester off and go down there full time?
So I started as a summer intern and stayed after the internship expired. I just got lucky. There was an opening in the office, so I took that opening, and it was really a scheduler opening and sort of body person opening. So my workload then and sort of the job description was making sure that from 6 a.m. until 10 p.m. The member was where he was supposed to be, doing what he was supposed to be doing, and then was delivered back home and picked up the next morning to follow the schedule. In leadership, he had a pretty strenuous schedule from breakfasts in the morning with other members of leadership through fundraisers in the evening.
Did you love the job?
I loved the job. I loved the job. And I would not have left other than the fact that at that point there was discussion about me moving to rural South Carolina so that I'd have some additional time in the district in order to get to know other folks. But at that point, it wasn't going to work for me to leave D.C. and go down there at that time.
Okay. So where did you go to high school?
I went to high school at Gonzaga College High School here in Washington, D.C.
Which is like a mini cult, almost.
It is growing into more than a mini cult, but yes, exactly.
So, a friend of mine from college who lives outside of Annapolis commutes from there to his kid to go to Gonzaga.
Yep. A lot of folks travel. When I was at Gonzaga, we had one or two that came in from Philadelphia, so all the way down from Philadelphia at that time. And it was a much different school at that time, so the area around Gonzaga has grown up a lot and has changed significantly with all the development down there. But it was a great place, a great foundation, and I probably value those 4 years more than any other 4 years in my air quotes career.
More than college, but
correct.
College was interrupted with work.
Correct.
So maybe that was
correct.
The case. So here at 720, what do you spend most of your time doing? And what are your typical clients?
Sure. So our firm really focuses about 70% of our time on healthcare. That's where our business is. It's where a lot of our clients are and where they focus. Most of my time is spent on advising clients on strategy, helping with day-to-day management of programs and making sure that what we've promised at the outset is going to be delivered to the client, as well as keeping an eye on what we're doing, because sometimes the best laid plans don't work out. You know, as you watch the political or the news cycle from day to day, things change very quickly with a tweet. Particularly in the last year or two, what we've noticed is that the attention span for certain issues changes very quickly. One day we're not talking about an issue, 2 weeks later we're voting on it, on an issue. So, you know, we've had to work with our clients to, number one, prepare for sort of the new normal. When an issue isn't necessarily going down the path that it typically would go down legislatively, you know, over the last 20 years, you know, we got very used to bills being introduced and for an entire Congress working on a bill with a crescendo of a vote. Things aren't necessarily working that way anymore. So what we try to do is we try to work with our clients to prepare for quick bursts when things have to happen quickly, but also just be prepared for sort of that new cycle that we're dealing with.
And are you seeing with social media much more video than you have in the past, say? Is it much more going to video?
Yeah, I think from a content perspective, video is being consumed a lot more by the average constituent or consumer All you have to do is go to Facebook or Twitter and see the amount of video that's being used. 720 actually about 7 years ago got very heavily invested in in-house video for our clients. We saw video as sort of the next opportunity, and so we started out doing advocacy impact videos for our clients, so solicitation videos, informational videos, advocacy videos that would very quickly explain an issue. You know, we started out doing 2 to 3 minute videos, and now videos are as short as 15 seconds. And that goes to the attention span and the amount of information and content we're looking at on a daily basis. I remember when I started my career at the Healthcare Leadership Council, we'd write a memo and then we'd print it out and then we'd fax it to a client or fax it to our member companies. Now, you know, we're in real time with email, with chat and things like that. The amount of information we're consuming now as opposed to 25 years ago is so great that I think our minds have been trained to see shorter snippets and briefer content.
So it's a lot briefer and a lot more of it, more numerous in a given
correct,
time.
Correct. The amount of the information we're looking at today as opposed to even 5 years ago is probably tripled at this point.
Well, that's similar to what Mark Zuckerberg has said, is that so much of it is going to video being consumed online.
That's correct.
So you work a lot with state lobbyists and lobbyists up here on the Hill?
Correct. In fact, we've noticed over the last 5 to 7 years, a lot of our work has actually focused back on the states, which was not where we were 10 years ago. A lot of our work, we've grown a lot of our work for working directly in state capitals, whereas before we were doing a lot of our legislative advocacy in Washington. It's really grown on the state side.
And how is that different than federal? How is the state? How do you find that? The good and the bad.
I actually love working at this state level. Actually, I like doing state level campaigns. Part of the reason is they move quickly. Mm-hmm. State legislative sessions move a lot more quickly, and frankly, I look at the connection between state capitals and campaigns as a closer connection. What's happening in your state capital really affects you as a constituent or a consumer in that state, and sometimes I find the linkages are more effective when we're talking about state politics with consumers in the state.
It's more immediate.
Correct.
And are the state lobbyists that you work with, is it helpful to work with them? Are they...
Absolutely. Whenever we do, you know, the interesting thing is, as an advocacy professional, we always have told our clients that we are not experts on all of the legislative priorities that they have or all of the federal targets they may have or legislator priorities we have. So when we go into a campaign or we go into a proposal process or a strategic development process, we always tap the expertise of our local state contacts and state network. And what I find working on state campaigns, when I work with a client that's based here in D.C. that wants to work on a state-level campaign, I always bring in one of the state lobbyists or public affairs people at the state capitol to ensure that we're giving them the right information, the right intelligence, and the right strategy. Because what we may think might be the right strategy at a national level or here in Washington for something, you really have to know the recent past history of an issue in a state, sometimes the long history of an issue in a state, in order to put together the right strategy. And that's not something you can get here in Washington or by sitting outside the state. You've really got to know somebody in the state capitol who has a really good perspective of what's gone on in the state historically.
So you really look, I mean, they're almost like partners in a way.
Exactly. We have partners in all 50 states, and especially at the state capitals where things get done legislatively.
Wow, so you can cover all 50 states?
Correct.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay. Just along those lines, are there, just because obviously a lot of lobbyists listen to this, you've obviously just explained what they can do to be very helpful. Are there things they shouldn't do?
So I can say, you know, it's interesting, more so at the state level. I've done a couple of campaigns at the state level over the last couple of years where an issue seems to always come up at the state level and it always gets beaten back. You know, the one thing that I've noticed when going into new state capitals or working with lobbying teams I may not have worked with in the past. Obviously, I'm always very deferential to the lobbyists in the states that have been working on these issues for a long time. But every once in a while, from an advocacy perspective, not the lobbying perspective, but from the advocacy perspective, sometimes it takes a while to encourage the lobbyists at the state level to let us get in there and try some new things or take a bit of a different approach. I think because of the speed at which legislative sessions move and the differences in the actual process that happen at the state level, sometimes there can be reticence to try new things or to be too proactive. But what we've found is that in many cases, when we're able to try some new things, we'll zig when they zag. It makes it's made for some pretty effective advocacy at the state level. And frankly, on issues that before were didn't necessarily garner a lot of grassroots activity, what we found is that when you inject the right balance of grassroots activity with lobbying, with policy development, as well as earned media campaigns and paid media campaigns, it can really be the difference between letting a session expire without a vote or with a down vote, as opposed to getting something actually passed.
Interesting. Very helpful to anybody who's listening. And for anybody who's young and listening, maybe in college, a student at American U, I think I know what you're going to say, but what advice would you give to someone who has an interest in campaigns, government, politics?
Yep.
What advice would you give?
Well, the first thing I would say is work hard. Happy hour can happen on the weekends. Happy hour can happen at 10 o'clock at night. I've always maintained a pretty strong work ethic. I think that number one, I would say get a internship on Capitol Hill or at your state capitol. Be willing to do anything in that internship, whether it's collecting clips online, whether it's getting coffee, running to get lunch. You never know when you're delivering a lunch to somebody in that office who's senior, they may ask you to sit down and talk about something. So never think that any type of work is beneath you, because the work that's beneath you might jettison you up very quickly.
Right. Well, I think that's good advice. Yeah. Well, Vlad, thank you for the time. This has been very, very helpful and interesting, and we appreciate it. Thank
Great.
You.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. All right. That was Vlad Cartwright from downtown Washington, D.C. I hope you enjoyed it. And I hope you had a great weekend. Enjoy the rest of your Labor Day. So until next week, we'll see you then.